So today we are reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, chapter 19, the killing of the demon Hiranyaksha. When was the last time we had morning Bhagavatam class here? The last time I was here? In last month? Okay, I'm thinking that might be the case here. Okay, so we're on chapter 19, the killing of the demon. Okay, I'll just read the first verse and then we can read here. Maitreya Uvacha Avadharya Virinchasya Nirvyali Kamritam Vachaha Kamrit Prahasya Prema Gardena Tad Apangena So Grahit Tad Apangena So Grahit Sri Maitreya said, translation by Srila Prabhupada, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which were free from all sinful purposes and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. First, let me repeat after me. Sri Maitreya said, after hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which were free from all sinful purposes, and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden with love. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word Nirvyalika is very significant. The prayers of the demigods or devotees of the Lord are free from all sinful purposes. But the prayers of the demons are always filled with sinful purposes. The demon Hiranyaksha became powerful by deriving a boon from Brahma. And after attaining that boon, he created a disturbance because of his sinful intentions. The prayers of Brahma and other demigods are not to be compared to the prayers of the demons. Their purpose is to please the Supreme Lord. Therefore the Lord smiled and accepted the prayer to kill the demon. Demons, who are never interested in praising the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because they have no information of Him, go to the demigods. And in Bhagavad Gita, this is condemned. Persons who go to the demigods and pray for advancement in sinful activities are considered to be bereft of all intelligence. Demons have lost all intelligence because they do not know what is actually their self-interest. Even if they have information of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they decline to approach Him. It is not possible for them to get their desired boons. Jai Gauranga Dinanda. It is not possible for them to get their desired boons from the Supreme Lord because their purposes are always sinful. It is said that the dacoits of Bengal used to worship the goddess Kali for the fulfillment of their sinful desires to plunder others' property. But they never went to a Vishnu temple because they might have been unsuccessful in praying to Vishnu. Therefore, the prayers of the demigods or the devotees of the Supreme Personality are always untinged by sinful purposes. Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai sri guruve namaha. I was born into the darkest of material life. In the Udyoga Parva of the Mahabharata, Krishna is sent by Yudhishthira and the other kings to go to the Kauravas, specifically to Duryodhan, for one last attempt at peace, because, as he said, that if a person attempts something, even if a person attempts a good thing, even if he's unsuccessful, he gets the same result as if he had actually succeeded. He says that. Krishna says like that. So even if you don't succeed because you attempted, you still get the same punya as if you actually had succeeded. And plus he wanted to avoid any people in the future criticizing him. So then he went to Hastinapur, and he was in the assembly. Everybody met him very nicely. Bhishma, everybody was royally treated, because many of the senior persons, they knew Krishna was actually not just a relative. They knew Krishna was God. After all, Dhritarashtra is the son of Vyasadeva. He could understand who Krishna was, you know. Vidura, also the son of Vyasadeva, he understood who Krishna was. Karna, he knew who Krishna was. They knew who Krishna was. So, Duryodhan, he was speaking very sweetly to Krishna. Come to my house, have dinner. So sweetly he was thinking. He was speaking so sweetly. It's like a knife dipped in honey. It was very sweet, but there was a blade underneath. He was just very sweet, but Krishna, he was not to be caught in this. Unlike, also the same thing as for Shalya, Duryodhan had presented, when Shalya was coming, the father-in-law, I mean the uncle of the Pandavas, Shalya, specifically he was the brother of Madri. So when he was coming, Duryodhan made so many arrangements, beautiful arrangements, so that when he would tire, there'd be a nice pandal for him and refreshments and food. But he did not say who it was. Finally, at the end, you know, Shalya was very, he says, whoever, he assumed it was Yudhishthira, says, oh, whoever has given me all these things, I will fight for him. And it turned out to be Duryodhan. So he was caught. He had to fight for Duryodhan. So Duryodhan did the same thing for Krishna. But Krishna didn't even look. So many expenditures he went through, Krishna didn't even look at these things. Because he knew all his sweet words, all his attempts to worship was just bluff. It was just all materially motivated. As says in this verse, they were free. Lord Brahma's prayers were free from sinful purposes. But everything that Duryodhan did was full of sinful purposes. There was not anything that Duryodhan did which was not sinful, practically speaking. He was like almost sin personified. He was so, you know, evil. I mean, who could be... You have to be pretty bad if even your mother says you should be killed. His mother said... every mother loves their children. But when even his mother says he should be killed, that's pretty bad. That's very bad. So even Gandhari says in the assembly of all the kings that he should be killed. Otherwise he will destroy all of us. So that's how bad was this. But he was so sweet. So sweet. He's speaking to Krishna everything. And Krishna says,
because you hate the Pandavas, it is as good as, who are my devotees, it is as good as hating me. Because we are equally related. Because actually Krishna is, Vyasadeva is the incarnation of Krishna, so he's also the father, Krishna is the father of Vyasadeva, is the father of Dhritarashtra, therefore Duryodhana is his grandson. So the same with the Pandavas, you know. So and of course Krishna is the seed-giving father of all creation, so he's equally related. So he said, but because you hate the Pandavas, you hate me. And those who, only those people only eat if they are in need of food, or if it's offered in love. So I'm not hungry, and you don't love me, because you hate the Pandavas. So how could you love me? So I'm going to go to the house of Vidura, and there I'll eat there, but not here. So later, the next day, we saw the real. Then Duryodhana showed his real face. Huh? He planned then to kidnap. He was going to kidnap Krishna. Satyaki could immediately figure out what was going on, and he won't. And then Krishna, he just laughed. He's trying to kidnap me. He's going to kidnap me. So then the first day he's all sweet, big smile. Yeah. The next day he shows he wants to kill Krishna. He wants to kidnap him. Kill Krishna. So his prayer was offered only with sinful purposes. And then even later, he showed the day before the war started, he sends the son of Shakuni, Uluka, as his messenger, purposely insulting, not only just once, but repeatedly insult Yudhisthira, Krishna. Also to insult Krishna, purposely insulting, and Yudhisthira, Arjuna, all of it, and to insult Virata, the father of Drishtadumna, insult all of them. So then we see his real face. You know, so on one hand he's trying to, for his own purposes, he tries to praise Krishna, but in reality, he wants to insult Krishna. This is a demon, the demons. But as we see in other parts of the Bhagavatam, that even when the demons are insulting Krishna, that they're actually praise in disguise. Praise in disguise. So this is an important point here, that when we approach Krishna, Krishna is in our heart. He is the inside every atom. He is inside the heart of the Atma. So he knows what we want. So there's no question of coming to him with any sinful purposes and praying to him. Because he, and thinking he won't know. Like Duryodhana thought Krishna couldn't figure this out. Krishna was playing, it's a drama he's playing, but as if Krishna didn't know what Duryodhana was up to. The whole thing is arranged by Krishna. That Duryodhana and all his followers should be killed. So when we approach Krishna, we should understand Krishna knows what we want, what our attitude is, what our mentality is. So we should go for our real self-interest. Now Prabhupada gives the example of the dacoits. They want some material benefit, and they are willing to do anything at any cost for some material benefit. But it is not their real benefit. It is actually against their self-interest to get some advancement in material life. Advancement in material life is exactly like living in a prison. If you were sentenced, what's the famous prison in India? I don't know the name of it. I know the prisons in different countries, but not in India. What's the famous prison in India? Prison. Which place? Dehradun. Is a prison in Dehradun? I think there's a maximum security prison in Delhi or something like that. Anyway, there's some prisons.
Now, advancement in material life is like trying to become, get some domination in the prison. You know, but a prison is just suffering. No matter which cell you're in, you're stuck. You're completely controlled. Whether you go from cell block A to cell block B to cell block C, it doesn't matter. The real business is to figure out how to escape from the prison. So we have to, while you're in the prison, you still have to live. So you still have to interact with the prison. But our energy, the energy should be, the real energy should be in how to leave the prison, not how to go from one cell to the next cell in the prison. I don't like this cell. That cell over there, it has more, it has air conditioner. It's a nicer cell. That cell, you know, it's got marble floors, you know, color TV. But you're still inside the prison. You still have to die. That's the material life. We still have to die. We still have to suffer. So no matter what, how much we struggle, you know, the owner of Infosys will die. The owner of Wipro, he will die. So all his struggling, he spent so much energy on that, he'll still die. And then what will be his next life? That's all of us. So now he still has to live in this world. It's like anybody who's in a prison, he has to live in a prison. But his main focus should not be on going from one jail cell to the next jail cell. He's there, he has to live, do the routine of the prison, but the main focus of the prisoner is how I should get out of this jail. While I'm in it, I have to figure out how to get out of the jail, not how to go from one cell to the next cell. To get out of the jail. So we're in this material world, we still have these bodies, we are still in a jail. But how to get out of the jail? While we're here, we have to interact, we have to eat. They're cooking prasad now. We have to go to the bathroom. We have to do so many things. But how to do and how to live in such a way that we can leave this material world? You know, as we get older and older, like the little baby we saw, you know, it's not like a little animal. It's not aware that the world is a place of suffering. It is suffering, but he's not aware. He thinks, you know, because babies are crying all the time. They're suffering all the time. The mother's always watching them to make sure the baby doesn't kill itself, you know. But the older we get, the more intelligent. Then there's a saying. You know, I think one devotee was saying that Prabhupada actually said it, that that wisdom comes through suffering. Wisdom comes through suffering. But it's not guaranteed that because you suffer, you become wise. Because there are many people who suffer who are still foolish at the end of their suffering. But at least if we're going to suffer, at least it should generate wisdom. And that wisdom should be that we should want to leave this place. Want to leave this place. You know. And so that is why we are in this temple. This is the, it's like when you want to go from Bangalore, you have to go to the airport, right? Or the train station. Or the bus station. And then you can, from that place, you can depart to your next destination, right? So if you want to, depart from this material world, you have to come to a temple. You have to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's so many temples, so many places. We have a temple next door. There also, so many temples Krishna set up, so many ways of leaving the material world, so many. In a house, there may only be one door to leave. But Krishna made so many doors you can leave. if you take it. You know. So many temples are there. So many holy dhams are there. So many rivers are there, sacred rivers. But we have to take very seriously
very, very seriously. Because material life is designed for suffering. Serious suffering. And you see, it's like our friend Sachidulal, he suffered. His wife died just a few weeks ago. She was lucky. Her death was relatively painless. It may not be so painless. It can be excruciatingly painful. And you will be surprised just how much pain your body can generate. You can be surprised that pain can be so great that death becomes a friend to you. That you won't be afraid to die. You will think, oh, my friend has come. The pain will stop. Pain can be so bad. So this is the material world. It's a very cruel place. Very cruel. And have no doubt about that. It's very cruel. And if you have a doubt, you'll find out that it is cruel. At one day or another, you'll find out how cruel it is. So don't wait till that day. Krishna's already told us that this place is a place of death. It is a place of suffering. He wasn't kidding. He's not joking. He is not joking about that. He's very serious. Yeah? In this verse, Krishna's, in this incarnation of Varaha, laughs heartily at those fools who are not thinking that he's serious. Krishna is very serious. He was very serious when he said to Arjuna in the Gita that the material world, from the top to the bottom, no matter where you go, it's suffering. It's Martyaloka. It's a temporary place full of misery. So we have to become extremely serious in our Krishna consciousness. To listen, to read every day Srimad Bhagavatam, to because this will attract us. Where is our destination? Just like if we want to go. Yesterday, I was sitting with one devotee. He's planting. He's having for his occupation. He does tours to different holy places in North India for people in South India. So he makes a brochure with pictures. This is where you're going to be going. And then the people get attracted. Oh yes, I want to go to that place. Right? And just like in oftentimes in airports, say it's in Canada. I was in Canada when I left to come to India. So people were going to Canada in that time of year. It's very cold. It was middle of November, so it was like -8. Was the normal temperature, big snowstorm. But people were going from that kind of weather, they were going to Hawaii, or they were going to Florida. So they had on, they weren't wearing clothes for winter weather, they were wearing their vacation clothes. They were going to be wearing, they had their, all their light clothes because they're going to on a vacation, right? Because they know what their destination is. They're not going, they're going from cold weather to hot weather. So why you should bring heavy, heavy clothes? So we also have a destination, right? So in our destination, they're not wearing pants and shirts. Yeah, where we want to be going, they're wearing dhoti. They're wearing angavastra. The ladies are wearing saris. Yeah? So we should be focused on what our destination is. Not be concerned if people are thinking, people are standing in the airport and it's 10 below zero, are not concerned that people are thinking they're looking strange because they're wearing shorts and they're going to, you know, they have short sleeves on. They're not concerned about, because they know they're going, they're leaving this freezing cold weather and they're going to a tropical paradise. So they don't care if people are looking at them a little bit odd. So we should not be concerned if people look at them, you know, they're old-fashioned, because we're leaving this place and we're going to another place. So why should we be concerned with what the people here are saying, are thinking? Huh? We have to think, because sometimes people they're afraid to wear dhoti. Oh, they'll think, you know, I'm not modern. I'm not up with the latest prison fashions. I'm not wearing the latest fashions of the prison. But you want to be dressed for the fashions of Vaikuntha. You want to be dressed for the fashions of Goloka. The fashion doesn't change there. It's eternal. You don't have new fashions every year. Krishna always wears peacock feather. Not that someday he's wearing ostrich feather. You know, he's always wearing dhoti. He's always wearing, you know, those kind of clothes. It's not they have a different fashions at different times. It's eternal. Krishna, he's the supreme artist. Yeah, he has the best taste. There's a saying, you know, that good taste doesn't go out of style. Who could have better taste than Krishna? His taste never goes out of style. It's eternally in style. So, and Radharani, she wants to attract Krishna. So now if Radharani thought that if she wore jeans, Krishna would be attracted, she would wear jeans. But guess what? She doesn't wear jeans. Because Krishna's not attracted to jeans. She would, you know, cut her hair. You know, Radharani doesn't cut her hair. This is because they're in eternal. They're in an eternal rasa, not in modern. This word modern, this idea of modern. Oh, modern is that's the old time. This is modern. Somehow modern is better. But this idea of modern, what does it mean? Modern. Modern means something which is ephemeral, which is existing for the moment only. What is modern today? It's not modern 100 years from now. It's out of style. It's that is the essential meaning of temporary. The word modern is the essential meaning of the word temporary. Which, what does it say in the Bhagavad Gita? Second chapter. Those who are knowers of the truth have ascertained that that which is unreal has no duration. And that which is real has no cessation. So modern means it has no duration because it won't be modern tomorrow. What is modern today will not be modern next week or next year. Therefore it's not real. It's just not real. It's not Vedic. This idea of modern is not modern. It's actually very old. Because even in Manu Samhita, you know, Manu, millions of years ago, explained that this idea of modern simply means it's not Vedic. It's not according to eternal principles. Because there were people, Lokakiya, who are modern ideas has just been going on for a long time. Because the material world, that is the philosophy of the material world, is to be modern. Because the material world, what does Krishna say? It's endlessly mutable. Endlessly changing, always changing, endlessly mutable. And people get fascinated by this endlessly shifting mirage, illusion. It fascinates them, it mesmerizes them, hypnotizes them, and then they die and take birth again. And the whole, that's what Maya is. They become fascinated by this ever-changing illusion. So if we want to leave, then we have to become fixed up on eternal principles. On the eternal principles. Not on that which is temporary. Sometimes we might have to, for various purposes, dress according to modern taste. For example, if you're going to go preaching in communist China or in, a Muslim country, probably wouldn't be a good idea to go dressed in dhoti with shaved head. Probably wouldn't be a good idea. Go to Saudi Arabia dressed, you have to go in disguise at first. But because it's warfare also. We're at war. We are at war with material energy. You're at war. So this is also done. This is a methodology of warfare. But when we are in a place like Bharat, then we don't have to be concerned about that, about these kind of considerations. Let's see what happens next here.
Verse 2. The Lord, who had appeared from the nostril of Brahma, sprang and aimed his mace at the chin of his enemy, the Hiranyaksha demon, who was stalking fearlessly before him. Another point, that Lord Krishna, here is described that he sprang from the nostril of Lord Brahma. So Krishna could do these things. You tell some modern person, these are just stories. They'll roll their eyes. You expect me to believe that, this big pig came out of somebody's nose? Right? And I'm supposed to believe this? That a big pig came out of somebody's nose? You go tell that to somebody, the big pig came out of, you saw a big pig came out of somebody's nose. They're not going to believe you. Now, of course, if everybody saw that a little speck came out of somebody's nose and it turned into a big pig the size of a mountain, that would definitely be in the newspapers, right? The Indian Express, they'd all be, pig comes out of man's nose. So Krishna can do that. Krishna can do it. Krishna has all inconceivable powers. There's nothing that Krishna cannot do. That's the first principle that Jiva Goswami explains in the Shatsandarbhas, is that Krishna can do everything. And if we cannot accept this concept that Krishna is all powerful, that God is all powerful and that there's nothing He cannot do, then you shouldn't go further. Because you're going to run into so many things that Krishna does which is beyond our understanding. Like I was in Delhi, every day I would chant my japa in front of the temple, in front of the Guru Stamba. So we'd have visitors would come from all over the world. Many Muslims came, many Muslims coming from Afghanistan, from Iran. The Iranians were mostly very nice, very nice. But one day I met two Muslims from Turkey, young men, engineers. They're going to school in India. So we were discussing things. And they said, no one has seen God. Because according to Quran, no one has seen God. The Bible says no one has seen God. Therefore, God has no form. They're saying like that. God has no form. No one has seen God. I said, well, if God wants you to see, then you'll see His form. And I said, but nobody's seen God. So you're saying that God cannot show you? Then they became caught. You're saying that God is not powerful enough to show you His form. They didn't know what to say. Because they say God is all powerful, but then they're saying you can't see His form. You can't see Him. But if God wants you to see, then you'll see. Didn't know what to say. They're worshipping an all-powerful God who's not powerful enough to show you how He looks. So they became confused. They didn't know how to answer that. They had to accept. If God is all-powerful,
He can show you what He looks like. God is vast, but He says, but He will give you the information to understand Him. What can we? We are tiny, insignificant specks in this universe. And this universe is only like one mustard seed in a bag full of mustard seeds. So what is our ability to understand God? But because God is powerful, He can make us understand. Huh? What does He say? Tesham satata yuktanam vachatam prittipurvakam tadhami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. Unto those persons who worship Me with great love and devotion, I give them the intelligence in which they can come to Me. So Krishna, He gives. He can give all intelligence. Dhruva Maharaj, when he saw Krishna, when he saw Lord Vishnu, he was a little boy. A 5 years old boy. He didn't know what to... He wasn't a great learned scholar like, you know, like Brihaspati. He didn't know what to say. He didn't know how to speak properly. He didn't know how to give, like Lord Brahma is just describing how Lord Brahma spoke so sweetly, offered so many nice prayers. Dhruva didn't know how to do it because he's only a little boy. So what happened? Lord Vishnu took his conch shell, touched him on the head. Dhruva starts, so many prayers all starts coming out of him. Because Krishna gave him the power. So if Krishna wants you to see Him, you will see. If Krishna doesn't want you to see, you won't see. It's that easy. Krishna showed to Arjuna the whole Vishvarupa. There's nothing that Krishna cannot do. But so these other religions, they have some knowledge of God, but even in this point, they can't accept. They say God has no, that God, nobody has seen God, therefore nobody can see God. If you say you've seen God, you know, but God can allow you to see Him. Like there was, they didn't know how to deal with that point. That's why the Shastra, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedic literature, is so so important. It is the gives a very clear conception of God. That's why since thousands of years, all contemporary cultures recognize that India had the highest culture. The Romans, the Greeks, they understood that India was the seat of the highest culture. In the history of many of the famous philosophers of ancient times, even though the vast majority of them never went to India, they would put in the resume that he had gone to India. Why? It was prestige. It was prestigious to go to India. Because that was the land of the highest learning. So even thousands of years ago, the Greeks, the Romans, the Egyptians, they saw India as the center of spiritual knowledge. Center of spiritual knowledge. There's even one famous Greek philosopher, magician, wise man. His name was Apollonius of Tyana. He was a real person. He was a personal friend of the Emperor Nerva. He lived... he was a contemporary. Maybe a little bit, born just slightly later than Jesus Christ. And so he walked all the way from the Roman Empire to India. And back. Why? Because he wanted to acquire knowledge. He was already vastly learned in so many subjects, but he wanted to learn more. So first he went to Persia, to Babylon. And they said, they told him so many things, but they said, but if you want to learn more, you have to go to India. Because then you will really find out. So then he went to India. He went to India. And there, they told him something very interesting. They said, the Greeks have learned their philosophy from the Egyptians. The Egyptians have learned their philosophy from the Ethiopians. And the Ethiopians have come from India. If you look on the map,
Ethiopia is just across from South India. They just go straight across. And Ethiopians, they look like Indians. The ones who live on the coast. So, anyway, the idea is that from ancient times, India was seen as the home, the seat of all spiritual knowledge. Just like today, everybody's thinking, oh, the United States, Japan, the centers of technology. It might be technology, you know, you might find tape recorders and, you know, Walkmans and MP3s all over the place, but it all comes from U.S., you know, from Japan, like that. That's the center of high technology. So the highest technology is spiritual technology, not material technology. And that is here, in India. So it's, we'll leave some time for discussion. Anybody have any questions, comments? So we're going to start, we're going to be wearing some eternal fashions when you come to the temple next time. You can come in dhoti, angavastra. There are temples in India where they would not let you in unless you come in dhoti and angavastra. You know that? Like in Tiruvananthapuram or Guruvayur, they would not let you in unless you're wearing dhoti. So we can see. I was telling my wife that the easiest place to preach is in India, because all you have to do is just dress like a devotee. That's all you have to do. You don't have to do anything. You just have to dress nicely, put on tilak, wear a nice sari. Immediately people, you're preaching, because people are thinking Hare Krishnas. These are all Hare Krishna devotees. How easy it is to preach, because we're a preaching movement. Right? We want to preach, we want to please Srila Prabhupada, the previous acharyas, by preaching. So it's right there in the neck of devotion that somebody who makes somebody else think of Krishna, he's preaching. So that's why if you just dress, you put on nice tilak, you dress nicely, people will think of Krishna. That is, you don't even have to open your mouth. No endeavor is required. Just have to get all, just by your very existence, you're preaching. How easy can you get? It is the easiest preaching there is. Just by, you know, I told her, she didn't believe me at first, but then now she's seeing it's true. So you can also do that. Whatever they may say, you have to remember, you're in the airport going on vacation. You're only here temporarily, but you haven't done the destination. So you're getting dressed for that occasion. Like if you're going to go to some wedding or something like that, you know, you get all dressed up very nicely because you're going to some very fancy occasion. Everybody else, you know, may not be dressed up, but they may look at you, but you know where you're going. You don't care what they say because you know where you're going. So you know, as long as you know where you're going, then what do you care what other people think? Right? So you know. We are leaving the material world. Where getting ready, we're preparing. We know what our destination is. We know what is the standards of Krishna. He won't allow. No shirt and pants is allowed. So you have to get used. You should get used to it now. What are you going to do? You're going to, well, how do they put, you know, like, what am I going to do? There's like Sita Mataji. It's like Sita Rani, Mother Sita, when they had to go to the forest. And they were exiled to the forest. So Mother Sita gave all her nice saris. You imagine how much. She gave all the saris to the wives of the Brahmins. And they gave her the clothing she had to wear. You know, bark. Clothes made from tree bark. And she put up, she didn't know which is the top, which is the bottom. She was like embarrassed. They had to help her because she didn't know what to do. She didn't know how to put the clothes because she never wore tree bark before. Leaves, tree, that's what they have to wear. So we don't want to be in that situation when we go to the spiritual world that we don't know how to
put the clothes on, you know. Because Krishna has his society, he has his civilization, and he wants everything to run smooth. It's better organized than Bangalore, than the city of Bangalore. Much better organized, very organized, and everything works perfectly. And if he finds that something is not quite right, out. Somebody has a wrong mental attitude, they go out, immediately leave, they find themselves in Bangalore again. Like that. So we should be very firm, we should be very convinced. We have to have this expression, the courage of our convictions. You know what that means? The courage, if we believe something, we have to be willing to not just talk the talk, but walk the walk, you know. You say it, then therefore you should also behave that way. Another one, put your money where your mouth is, you know. So they can talk easily, but they don't say anything. They're not willing. You know what a person holds dearly by where they put their money. So we have to act. That was the response of Arjuna. I said, Duryodhan, send a messenger with so many insults. Of course, the messenger was very intelligent. In the very beginning, he said to them, you all know the procedures of messengers. I'm only the messenger. Don't kill me. Know what I'm going. I'm only delivering the message. It's Duryodhan who's saying it, not me. So don't feel anything bad towards me. So he gave this very long speech, and then Arjuna said, "This is my answer to Duryodhan. I will answer him with arrows. There's not much to say. Action speaks louder than the words. So my answers will come with arrows, as arrows." That was all he had to say. So we have to act, not just talk. All right then? Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj Ki Jai.